Al Bradbury, welcome to Cable here in Portland, that you know so well.
Thanks, Phil. It's great to be back.
Al Bradbury started her career in labor as a researcher and organizer for Local 49 of the SEIU here in Portland. And while here, she hosted labor radio on Cable, this radio station. She then moved to New York as a writer for the monthly journal Labor Notes. It's the voice of radical labor, the people working to put the movement back into the labor movement. She started as a writer for Labor Notes, a couple of years later became a co-editor, and was recently named editor. So Al Bradbury, this summer's Labor Notes conference, it happens every 2 years. It's the goal place for radical labor to meet and talk and get inspired. This year was another attendance record, a large increase, over 4,000 workers this year. This year it featured, among much else, many of the key workers at Amazon, Starbucks, many other low-wage service workers, mostly young people. These shop floor people organized their fellow workers. They won elections to form unions. Amazon, an 8,000 worker warehouse. At Starbucks, quite a few locations have filed for an election. And, of course, other groups of service workers. That was completely unexpected. This was an electrifying moment for all of us committed to social and economic justice. And for many of us, this spontaneous, in quotes, worker self-organized uprising was seen as the route to a new labor movement and the future of worker power. Others, though, also on the radical left, they're committed to what they call deep organizing. And they have reservations about the momentum organizing. They've contended that these new union leaders, in fact, have reached out and learned from the radicals in today's unions, but need to think about how to structure and operate in order to maintain over the long run commitments and enthusiasm. So first, Al Bradbury, tell us about why this momentum organizing was so enthusiastically embraced by much of the radical left. And then later in the interview, we discussed the deep organizing model, that they are potentially quite compatible, and the combination could actually hold the future of the labor movement. First, though, why Amazon, Starbucks, and so many others were so welcome and indeed electrifying?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the first thing to say is that these wins were very exciting because we all thought they were impossible. If you had asked me a year ago if it was possible to win a union authorization election in an Amazon warehouse with its huge turnover and with the employer's ample resources to spend on union busting, I would have said, no, it can't be done. And to win at all of these Starbucks outlets similarly, these were the kind of things that existing unions were mainly not even attempting to do because employers have become so sophisticated in their union busting methods. There's a whole industry. And in sort of defensively, unions have developed a set of very stringent criteria for how to assess what it's going to take to win. You really need every person committed and, you know, conduct a lot of the organizing in secret. And then you go public with a super majority and you expect that you're going to lose some of that majority once the employer starts applying the screws. Many unions have given up on organizing on a large scale altogether, have refocused their energy on legislative campaigns or on trying to get labor law improved. So we don't even see many unions embarking on these big union drives. So the fact that these campaigns were won, that they were organized, you know, with little resources, largely by the workers themselves, without a huge amount of support from institutional unions at first, it's pretty exciting. And one thing it says is we are in a moment of opportunity when, you know, maybe some of the rules we thought we knew about what it takes to win and how hard it is to win might have shifted because of the various circumstances of the moment we're in. I think, you know, you could list out a number of things that are unusual about right now. One big one is that workers have a lot of leverage because employers want to hire. There's a so-called shortage of workers everywhere. If you get fired from a job, it's not as scary as it used to be because it's easier to get another job. And people know that and are willing to take greater risks. People also have a lot of reason to be angry and fed up, having endured the various outrages of the pandemic, when billionaires managed to get even richer while letting workers suffer and die on the job. You really exposed the callousness and greed of the ruling class. So there's a lot of reason to be mad. Inflation, wild inflation, is driving up the prices of everything. People, you know, want and need a raise. And, you know, in the sort of general chaos and apocalyptic conditions, I think, affect the context that younger workers are thinking, too. So it's exciting, I think, also to people who have spent decades in the labor movement to see a young generation of people embracing unionism, calling it their own, making it their own. It gives you a sense that there is hope. You know, in the time I've been working in the labor movement, we keep seeing union density steadily decline. The percent of the workforce that's in unions, you know, just keeps going down and down. And you have this sense of like, is our movement just going to, you know, eventually sort of dwindle to nothing? So this upsurge of workers organizing themselves, spreading the idea of unions, doing it very quickly and winning campaigns, you know, really gives a sense of hope.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KABU 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. I've been talking to Al Bradbury. She's the recently appointed editor of Labor Notes. She once, in fact, was an organizer, researcher here in Portland, and, in fact, was one of the hosts of Labor Radio on this radio station. We've been discussing the extraordinary, greatly inspiring set of union victories at Amazon, Starbucks, other places. The kind of organizing that Al Bradbury discussed, I think it's called momentum organizing because it comes in a period of great ferment in the United States. I think everybody is on the left is both amazed and pleased by the momentum uprising, by the capacity of the young people to win an election without having laboriously gotten a very large percentage of the workers to sign themselves as supporting a union and seeking a union election. They really go in there. But there also is a critique of those momentum organizing advocates and practitioners who see the unions as too old-fashioned, stodgy, unwilling to take risks, bureaucratic. And the critics are also, though, from the left. This is not coming from the established unions who marvel at what's happening but don't know what to do, although some of them are moving. Tell us about the critique and, in fact, an alternative practice that seemed to be being dealt with, considered to be rivals, which and later in the interview we'll talk about. It's the fact is they're really very compatible in many ways. Tell us, though, about the critique that momentum organizing has come from these seasoned but extraordinarily capable radical people.
I think it's possible to make too much of this distinction because I think that both what you're describing as momentum organizing and what you're describing as deep organizing have a lot in common, and most people sort of engaging in either would mostly overlap. But it, you know, an argument can be made that we should be careful of romanticizing too much the spontaneous structurelessness of the moment, because in order to build and maintain power, you do need to build institutions and structures that will last. I was talking recently with a leader in the Canadian postal workers who's local, had a series of direct actions on the job where members got tremendously excited. They fought off overreach by management by, you know, taking collective action together on the shop floor. And this activist thought that this would transform his local. But he said after a little while, that energy dissipated. People don't want to be fighting the boss all the time. So you do need to build structures that maintain the lessons of the moments when you have action and excitement and pass them along so that as a union, you're building power over time and not just having these flurries of energy. The question of how quickly should you move to an election? There are a set of criteria that good organizers usually use. And I think the methods that they taught me as an SEIU organizer are basically the same as what the AFL-CIO Organizing Institute teaches, is basically the same as what we would teach in a Labor Notes Secrets of a Successful Organizer class, or Jane McAlevey teaches in her classes, that you aren't just trying to mobilize the people who are already pro-union. You're trying to figure out who are the real leaders in a workplace, you know, prioritize getting them on board and networking them together, build connections between them, map out the groups, and commit together to take action together and to go further than you maybe were prepared to alone. Those kinds of structures, that kind of change is part of how you change a workplace, not just taking one action together, but, you know, forming a communication network, staying in touch, building trust. So those kinds of things, you know, mapping out a workplace and really working to get the key leaders engaged in a structure that can be maintained and, you know, maintaining good lists are some of the things that are sometimes called deep organizing. But to me, I don't see a reason, you know, why these two ideas should be counterposed. I think most people engaged in organizing would agree that you both want to build power that lasts. And you want to take advantage of moments of energy when they arise. And the fact that Amazon workers were able to skip some of those steps, not have sort of counted everybody or mapped an entire workplace of 8,000 is a great thing. It doesn't mean it'll always work. They lost at the next warehouse that they tried. You know, it's a moment when we'll have a better percentage of wins, and it's maybe worth taking more risks, skipping steps sometimes, you know, to try and win what we can in this moment. But that shouldn't be taken to mean that we should throw out all those insights about how do you build lasting power in a workplace, how you consolidate what you've won and keep moving forward to win more, to get stronger in a way that can last in the long term.
Yeah. You know, one thing that both deep organizing, there's a lot of things on which they're completely compatible, but one that's important to me that stands out is that in both of them, they do not try to stay secret that what they're doing. They, in fact, want to be well known that there are people who are challenging the boss, including workers, some workers who put themselves on the line and get fired, which then leads to, of course, often real resistance and sympathy by people who had not known anything about unions and were maybe suspicious of them. But the union is defending their fellow workers who, in fact, had the guts to challenge their employer, and they're then fired illegally. It seems to me that both of them, the Amazon workers especially, but Starbucks as well, they maintain this presence. They make it known that they're organizing. They're not trying to do it in secret. The Amazon people have this tent set up right in front of the Amazon warehouse. Of course, the Amazon warehouse goes on for a quarter mile. But they were leafleting always at the gates. It was said by one of them that we always had the tent staffed by our people. Sometimes the workers would go by 50, 100 times without ever coming in. But when they saw their fellow workers were there, one day they did come in. They really made, and they gave out leaflets and newsletters. It seems to me that's also true of the deep organizing. I remember reading about the hospital workers in Arizona. They also set up a tent in front of the hospital and kept it staffed by people, fellow workers. It seems to me that one of the important things is being proud union and raising the issues that workers are most concerned with.
I think it's certainly true that because labor has been in a place of weakness for so long, some of our organizing methods maybe suffer from coming from a place of fear, that we know the boss basically has more power than we do. And, you know, and we're going to try and organize covertly and see if we can get this through before the boss really catches on and brings down the hammer, because we know they have such a big hammer to bring down that often they can smash everything. So it is heartening and exciting to see that the Amazon workers were able to flout some of those truisms and, you know, be public and weather Amazon's campaign, though Amazon's retaliation has been no joke. A lot of people have been fired, you know, otherwise terrorized, and the same is true at Starbucks. This organizing we've seen, you know, spreading to other big brands around the country. Chipotle apparently got wind of an organizing drive and shut down the store before workers could win their election. You know, that may eventually be found to be illegal, but in the meantime, they will have lost their campaign. So it is no joke what the power that the employers have, and there's a reason why people have tried to organize in secret. But I think you're right that the moment calls for boldness and fearlessness, and in part that fearlessness is what is contagious and exciting and spreads to others. And some of it is rooted in workers' sense of their real economic power, the leverage that we have right now. And some of it perhaps is inspired by workers' involvement in other movements, the Black Lives Matter movement. But also, I think, for whatever set of reasons, rejecting fear, saying, go ahead and fire me, that's all right, but we're going to stand up for our rights, is an exciting and inspiring thing, and it spreads, and other people want to join the same. And I would hope that unions and organizers, you know, take heart from that idea and spread it. I think the other thing that's important to point out about these campaigns that are winning recently is that they are rooted in the workers themselves. They're really sort of started by and led by the workers in their shops, which might sound self-evident about a union campaign. But it isn't always so, and I think because it's so hard, because we've developed this set of sort of counterintuitive rules, unions have sometimes been operated too much as like, this can only be done one right way, and it has to be done by the staffers who've been trained in how to do it the one right way. So like, you know, wait till we get there, and we'll tell you how to do it, and then do it that way. And that approach can be very top-down, isn't very democratic or empowering, perhaps, to workers involved. The Amazon Labor Union, of course, is an independent union. The Starbucks workers are affiliated with a branch of SEIU. But in both cases, they've really been sort of grassroots efforts where, you know, some of the choices made by the workers are not ones that staff organizers might make based on their experience. But the fact that it's led by the workers, they're owning it. They're the ones talking with people elsewhere about, you know, do you want to do the same as us in your workplace? Well, here's how we did it. Here's how you can do it. You know, not necessarily mediated by professional organizers. I think that's part of what is exciting and real about it, why workers are taking heart that they're, you know, they can talk to somebody just like them who's made the plan, who's done it from, you know, soup to nuts, and then they could do the same. And it's interesting to think about how can unions that are inspired by this moment, that want to take advantage of this moment, you know, give some of those tools, help spread that spirit to their members and be helpful and, you know, not in the way. I mean, I think that idea of there's nothing particularly mystical about organizing skills. They've been well known for some time and we can share them. We've seen a number of organizations doing that. I mean, that's some of what Labor Notes does. We do these online trainings, Secrets of a Successful Organizer, every month. Anyone can sign up and learn the basics of organizing. Jane McAlevey has been doing big online schools with people around the world teaching, you know, those same kinds of methods. This group, the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee, that formed during the pandemic, the whole idea of it was, let's, you know, make direct connections between workers anywhere who are fed up with how their employers are abusing their rights or putting them at risk during the pandemic. Put them in touch on the phone with an organizer somewhere who can help, you know, talk them through the basics so they're not held back, so they can go ahead and take action together. And the News Guild has an interesting program sort of on a union-wide scale that is trying to put some of these tools in people's hands in a more systematic way. So there's been this whole rash of organizing among journalists, both in newspapers and in online outlets over the last few years. There's sort of more interest and excitement than you could handle if you were saying, well, we have to assign a staff organizer of the News Guild to shepherd each of these campaigns. So they, you know, put a lot of the tools down and, you know, figured out, well, how do we sort of translate, boil it down into like spreadsheets that people can fill out and sort of checklists people can do? How do we know we're ready to move to the next phase of the campaign? And started doing this training en masse and figuring out how can members who've been through a successful campaign then, you know, jump right into helping the next group of members organize. And that kind of initiative where unions don't hold it all too close to the staff, like let the members pick up the skills and run with it, let the unorganized workers pick up the skills and run with it, that's necessary if we're going to organize on scale. So, you know, I think we shouldn't throw out the baby with the bathwater and pretend that there isn't any expertise or knowledge to be had about organizing. And I don't think anybody's really arguing that. But we should figure out how to share it quickly and digestibly so that people can pick it up and run with it, and we take as much advantage as we can of the moment we have.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour on Cable Radio. I've been talking to Al Bradbury. She's the editor now of Labor Notes. She spends a good part of every day dealing with these kinds of issues, reporting on what's happening in the labor movement, about not just the labor movement, but the movement of the working class in this country towards thinking about a very, very different economy, which in fact, one of my interests is that new economy has to be sustainable, which will require enormous changes in the way we humans reproduce ourselves and reproduce society. It's good that socialism is now gaining a lot of converts because it's necessary for us to survive. Labor Notes actually reports on all of those subjects and gives you up-to-date monthly reports. Al, tell us how people can subscribe and learn more about Labor Notes.
Thanks, Bill. Anyone can go to labornotes.org. That's labornotes.org. Where you can subscribe to our monthly magazine, you can sign up for our free weekly email newsletter, you can read our articles, and you can sign up for trainings and events that are coming up. We're doing in-person events this fall in the Twin Cities, New York, Alabama. But also every month we have online trainings for stewards, for shop stewards, for people who want to organize in their workplace or want to make their, you know, wake up their union and get it more active. We do a sequence called Secrets of a Successful Organizer. You can sign up, join other workers like you in all kinds of sectors, you know, in a Zoom training. Labor Notes is really the hub of rank and file to rank and file connection. That is sort of workers sharing with other workers, what are we learning in our organizing, you know, what worked, what didn't work, what are we struggling with, and helping build a stronger movement.
Al Bradbury, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's been a pleasure.